the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back once again with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. Our award-winning weekly look at that. Big thanks to all who voted for us in the Football Content Awards. I have to admit, I thought my days of celebrating winning gold were over, but where there is a will, there is a way. Thanks for all the comments post-award too. It's nice to know that we are loved and appreciated. Much praise and thanks to all the other non-league contingent across the various categories of the Football Content Awards. It is great to see so much out there now for the non-league fan compared to when Caroline Barker first took to the airways with this show. Competition, yes, but all still part of the non-league family. So it's like sibling rivalry within a family. We all secretly love seeing a non-league story making mainstream media, whoever got it there. So this week, Dave Anderson taking a breather, so you'll have to make do with my solo guidance, I'm afraid, as we talk to a varied set of guests on how the world of non-league is shaping up in the run-up to Christmas. Still no competitive action at steps 3 and 4, but action in steps 1, 2, and dotted around in steps 5, 6, and 7. So let's get matters underway. Well, before we do, let's update since the rest of this show that follows were recorded. And I'm adding it in now because it'll make a bit more sense when you listen to the bits that have been recorded before the announcement came out from the DCMS by the FA. So the new DCMS advice suggests that clubs in Tier 3 on the government's COVID tiers can now have up to 15% of their capacity in attendance at games, but home fans only. My question is, will that be enough for the Trident Leagues to come out of suspension? In fact, will that be enough for non-league to survive? We'll wait to see what the Trident Leagues come up with, but personally, I would advise caution. Now, we all want football back. We're all football fans. We say this time and time again. We are for the fans, by the fans. But this isn't as straightforward as people would like to celebrate and say how wonderful it is. People are saying, we don't need to consider it now. We've been given the opportunity to get fans back in the grounds. We have, but we need to think about it. Just a word of caution. If it means that the additional burden on the clubs to put these games on, to ensure that it's only home fans coming in, to step up even further the great COVID measures that have been put in place by these clubs, it's going to be a major burden. We've also got to consider that the safety advisory groups, the local councils, the fire, the ambulance, and all these people that make up these SAGs that are quite often mentioned, these are going to have a right to limit even further than the 15%. Now, looking at a grade C, so step 3 across the pyramid there, a grade C ground capacity must be 1950. So we're saying 15% of 1,950 people, just below 300 people. One, is that enough for clubs to survive? Because we haven't got other revenue streams. There's debate as to whether snack bars are allowed to open. There's certainly, in the tier 3 areas, there won't be the ability to have alcohol, and there's various other restrictions on that across the hospitality sector. So we're talking about, are less than 300 people through a turnstile every other week, maybe every week, because we're looking to get as many games on as possible, get the season finished. Is that enough to run a football club? If it is, that's the maximum that's going to be allowed in. These SAGs, the safety advisory groups, could well limit that to even lower. So we've got to look at the financial implications of that, but we've also got to look at the burdens upon the people that run our football clubs. Fans are fantastic. Fans are essential. But as we've said for years, week in, week out on this programme, volunteers are even more essential to non-league, because without these volunteers, we can't let the fans in anyway. My big concern is that there's such a burden on the administrative issues that this allowance, as it's being called, so many burdens that are then put on these volunteers that are running the club that are already super stressed out. They're already at the end of their tether. Are we at risk of losing these people? That volunteers, it's their life's work, but in almost every case, they're not paid for it. So it's very easy for them just to walk away, and it risks non-league heading down into a spiral from which it would never return. I don't want to sound doom and gloom. I want football as much as the next person, but I also want to inject a dose of realism into what is a very passionate subject. If you could play out this season only for your club to go bust for next season, either financially or through the lack of bodies just to open the gates and get a game on, is that really worth it? That's the question that I want people to consider. That's the question I'm sure the Trident Leagues will be considering, and hopefully people at the FA will be considering in their response to the DCMS. So on social media, there's plenty of doom and gloom amongst the non-league fans. But as I've always told my family, there's a need to be thankful that there's always somebody in a worse off position than you. For some, the whole season once again appears pointless. For our next guest, at the time of suspension, it actually was. Now, what if your side had started the currently suspended season and lost all seven of those opening games? And then what if the last game before lockdown was postponed due to COVID-19 in the opposition camp? And then you came out of lockdown and in the government's new Tier 3, so no fans were going to be allowed in. You'd probably want to go back to bed at least. But our next guest, that's the reality, but there's still much to be thankful for. And hopefully you'll tell us more about that. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Chairman at Mangotsfield United, Mike Richardson.
How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you? I guess 2020 unlikely to be on your best loved years.
Yeah, it's been very difficult in all fairness, on and off the pitch, really. With the lockdowns, etc., financially, it hit us big time. Like most clubs in our level, you know, it's just very difficult. You know, we're just, we're in out of lockdowns. We never know where we're coming and going. At the minute, we're Tier 3. So, you know, we can't have no fans in. I think the league had a meeting last week to discuss the way forward. But for clubs like ours, with no fans coming in through the gates, our clubhouse, again, is shut, you know, so we've got no income throughout the week. So, yeah, at the minute, it's quite difficult, really. But, yeah. But we're not alone.
You're not alone, and we often talk about the non-league family, etc., but it's not always shone through, particularly in times of big decisions or time to crisis. You must have been fairly pleased that there was solidarity shown by clubs, not only in your league, but also across all the leagues at Step 3 and 4.
Well, yeah, I think, like I said just now, we're all in the same situation, with no fans in. There's no clubhouse open after a game. You know, you can't sell nothing or buy nothing, and it's just typical. And but like I said, what can we do until we're taught by powers that be other ways? And we just got to go with what we're doing. But it's very difficult. But like I said, most clubs in our level are in the same situation, and they can't afford to. Because one of the things that the league was on about was limited that play behind closed doors. Well, that's a non-starter, really, for clubs like ours.
Well, yeah, I wanted to point that out, actually, because it's a great point, because you'll get plenty of people, they'll look at the statistics, and statistics, you can always find something to please either one side of the argument or the other. And you look at your crowds this season, I think there was, on those games that you've had, there's a 30% increase on crowds. But I've long said that no club, particularly at non-league level, but even as high as you want to go, I'm yet to find a club that solely exists on crowds alone coming through the gates. And it's the other revenue, like the hospitality stuff, like the community stuff, the stuff that's so vital for clubs like yours. It just means that even the season that we have had so far that's currently in suspension has been costing clubs just to get that far.
Well, the thing is, the big problem for clubs at our level is, like you said, about the gate money coming in. there's some times when we've had home games where by the time the refs have been paid and expenses, we've ended up with £50. And that's especially more so on midweek games. But Saturdays is different. The reason the gates are up at the minute, I think, is because with the City, the Rovers, and having no crowd, so the fans are out looking for games to get out of the house on Saturday afternoon. And lucky enough, we've been quite well supported by these guys, and it does help us financially, because while the club is shut, we've still got our bills to pay. Sort of electric, all the utilities still got to be paid, insurances, and with no income coming in, we're having to find it.
Yeah, and
like I said,
the situation we're in now as well, where Bristol Rovers and Bristol City are going to be allowed to get their fans back in, that increase that you've mentioned there, that then slides away as well.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that's the problem with non-league football. I think the big problem we've got is wage bills. I think obviously there's no one being paid at the minute, but clubs like ours, when the gates are back to normal, it doesn't cover the wage bill, and we have got the smallest wage bill in our league by a long, long way, and probably even the league below. There are teams paying a lot more than we are. So, that's the way it is. There's not a lot we can do about it. I mean, until we can get the club back open, because we roam every night of the week with Skittles, etc. And on a weekend, we sort of always have a function. But that's gone now. And I don't know when it's coming back, because I had a call from someone yesterday chatting about the same thing. And I think we're 6 months away. I can't see anything changing until probably the summer. So financially, I don't know how clubs are gonna survive, because, like weddings, etc., and sort of birthday parties and all these things that we do aren't going to happen for at least 6 months minimum. Obviously the vaccine's out now, so hopefully that's a game changer. But again, that's going to take a good 3 to 4 months to filter through. So I'm not sure if our season is finished, to be honest. I mean, like you said earlier on, you've got clubs who have gone really well at the start, the top of the table and playing well and, got a chance of going up. And there's us, struggling to stay in the league because we played 7, lost 7. And it's obviously going to be difficult for us because we're very young and inexperienced. So it's difficult for the clubs who have pushed the boat out and tried to get promoted. I feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I'm pleased you've almost read my mind there, because I wrote a piece last week in the non-league paper about the very same, that we're in a situation now where non-league was broken. I think the financial model was broken before this season, and COVID's brought it to a head. And I think we need to take this opportunity now, really, to relook at where things are, because we've got wages spiralling out of control, but the percentage of turnover of clubs, and this has been, the COVID situation has shown this up under a much bigger microscope. And you mentioned about being the lowest budget in the league, and you have to be fair to you guys as well, because manager Glyn Ashton there made the step up from managing just the youth side back in February. I think he's probably involved in many aspects of the club as clubs like yours run, but you have a very, very young side, and that's great for non-league football. That's what non-league football should be about. It should be about giving the opportunities to these young players, but we need to look at that balance of, we need some money to be able to run football clubs, not just pay players.
Well, I think that's been probably the biggest problem over the last five to 10 years, is the money being put around by certain clubs. I think also, I don't blame them. It's up to them. Best luck to them. But it's individuals that are doing it. The clubs itself aren't doing it. They've got individuals putting money in, sponsoring players, etc., etc. And best of luck to them. If that's what really want to do it, then fair play. I mean, you know, but we've made a decision at our football club. It's not the way to do it. We can't afford to do it. We haven't got the individuals willing to do that. So we've got to cut our cloth accordingly. And, you know, we've got a very, very large youth section, over 500 players, youngsters. So, you know, that's the only way that we'll survive, because we cannot pay the wages that some of these players are demanding. And, you know, I'd have been a player, but got bit in the club for paying it. And, you know, and a lot of them still won't get promoted, and all that money's gone. And don't get me wrong, we've all been guilty of it. And but we've had to have a real rethink about it. And like you said, COVID has probably brought it forward, you know. But I don't think clubs will ever survive on gig money or income. But you do need some sponsors, etc. And in all fairness, we've been quite lucky with that. You know, we've got quite a good sponsorship network. That you know, but it's certainly, and you know, as we can see over the last few years, you know, our football club have gradually cut back, because it's either that or you go bust. And you know, we can't allow that to happen.
Yeah, I'm guessing when you first became chairman, you didn't expect it to be all silverware and celebrations. But were you fully aware at the time of all the time and stress that comes with, you know, being in that role and sort of heading the football club up?
No, well, no. I mean, you know, I think what happened in, well, I came in it the 2005-2006 season, and the club had got promoted to the Premier Southern League, which is a good standard, but financially the club was never in a position to do that, you know. And it's it's been hard work, you know. It's not sustainable. That level was not sustainable for this football club. And you can see now, I've talked to other chairmen, you know, in it's so much more expensive to step up, you know, with travel costs, you know, to coach every other week, you know, and that's going up all the time. Then you got your weight. It's just a bottomless pit. And so you've got to be very, very prepared when you step up the level financially. And unfortunately, our football club weren't. And, you know, that's the way it is. And I think also as well, I think, you know, the dynamics have changed with bars, except for the club sort of doesn't turn over the money it used to turn over. I think Sky TV hasn't helped. Over the years, you know, we were on a midweek game, we would get, I don't know, say, if you go back a long time ago, the 80s, you'd get 400-500 people watching a game on a night time, an evening game. Whereas now, with all the TV football on, it's killing non-league football, because it's killing the crowd. Because, you know, not, in all fairness, you know, if you've got a choice to play Barcelona playing Manchester City on a Tuesday night, or Mangersfield playing Tottenham at home, where would you go? It's raining, where would you go? I don't know. So I think that's had a massive impact on non-league football as well, all the televised football, because on a Saturday you can get three games now. You get one at 12:30, one at 5:15, one at 7:30. So you don't have to go outside your house.
And this is the discussion I was having with someone the other day, where they were saying, oh, it's been great for non-league football because you've been able to get some fans in, and you know, people are going to your games. But it's almost like a short-term shot in the arm.
Definitely.
Because, as you say, we've now got football at almost every hour of the day. If you wanted to, you could probably just sit down on your sofa, you know, with a beer or a cup of tea,
and
not move, and just watch football. But in the longer term, there won't be any football to watch, because clubs like yours and mine and up and down the country aren't going to be able to survive.
They're not going to be here, mate. And that's right, you know. But I don't know what you do about that. I mean, you know, like I said just now, if you know, what would I do if I weren't really involved in football? What would I do on a Saturday afternoon, freezing cold? Do I want to watch Man City play Arsenal at 12:30, or do I want to get in the car and go watch Man City on a cool Saturday afternoon? I don't know. But it's certainly affecting football, non-league at our level anyway, you know, and it's affecting you know, what we're able to do financially, because people aren't, like I said, sometimes we were getting 70, 80 people into the game. And, you know, a midweek game, you lose money. You lose money.
But you're still there. You're still there. You're still, and first and foremost, you're a fan as well. So you have the burdens of every other fan on your shoulders too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been in football all my life, since I've been eight, you know. And, but obviously, there will be a time when that it does need, and we're getting there, it does need someone else to step up, because, you know, we're all getting older. And, you know, sort of, it's going to be time for someone else to take it on. And, but, you know, we'll leave it in a position that we didn't take when we took it on. It wasn't a very good spot, but hopefully now, you know, we've cut back on wages, etc., our outgoings. You know, I've got me, I tell my wife, but I mean, sometimes you lay awake at night and you think, how am I going to pay that bill tomorrow, or how are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? And I've had enough of that. that's why we have cut the budget back, because the club has to live within its means. And when I'm gone, that's what they're going to have to do anyway. So we put it in place now.
Well, hopefully you won't completely disappear, Mike, because it's people like you that mean that we've got football to still think about, at least, even if we can't watch it at the moment. But it's still at the heart of the community. Somewhere like Mangotsfield, where it is a community. I think originally a mining town, weren't you, in the northeast of Bristol there. So it's like
there's a village club, you know. Yeah. In all fairness, I think sometimes we punch way above our weight. We're a village club. You know, sometimes when you go to these town teams, you know, like we've been at Tiverton, Taunton, and all the local, they're big towns, you know. And but we're a village club, and sometimes people forget that, you know. But I've got to say, we do have a lot of good people around the club who've been with us for years and years and years, and they go up there every day, and they sort of potter around, all retired. And they're the heartbeat of the club, really. You know, I mean, we've got some ladies around who come up and help out, and loads of lads that come up. And without them, then it would definitely be very, very difficult. So, you know, we do have a good, we have a nucleus of good lads there. But the trouble is, they're getting older, you know, and I don't see where the young ones are coming through, to be honest, you know, and because the responsibility is.
Yeah, well, this is a discussion we've had for years on this show about the need for volunteers. I still joke, I'm still one of the youngest people that walks into the boardroom, and now I walk very much slower than I did when I first went into a boardroom, because I'm getting older. But and with the current situation, we just need to work collectively, and the solidarity of the Step 3 and Step 4 leagues is a great thing. But we also need some help from across football to get the message out there as to why non-league clubs are so important to the whole world of football.
Well, of course they are, and, you know, and sometimes, you know, we do breed a few players that go through, and we've had a couple now, and because we're linked with the South Gloucester College under a lad by the name of Dave Hockaday, who was at Leeds United and all that, and he's running it up there, and, you know, we're using a lot of their lads, and we've had a couple, you know, go to pro clubs, and they're always looking at our lads in the pro clubs, because we have got some really talented kids. The trouble is, they're inexperienced, and, you know, sort of, they get beat up a couple of times at certain clubs, you know, and not nasty, but the physical side, they lose the battles, and that's where we're struggling. But for anybody that wants to watch a young, talented side and they give everything, basically, and they very get paid very little, it might be good for someone to have a look at them, because there's always people watching them. The scouts are always there. You know, I look around, I see, you know, a few of the clubs that we know. We're always having a look, because we have one or two that are decent. And, you know, we've had a couple go out on week's trials at certain clubs, you know, last year and this year. You know, we've had one at a Premier club for a week and things like that. You know, and so, you know, it is what it is, you know, and it's going to be tough for us to stay in this league. But the way it's looking, I'm not sure if the league are finished. So, again, we'll be in it again next year, which is for the clubs that have got the designs on moving on and pushing on, and fair play to them. It'd be disappointing for them. I'm disappointed for them, because some of the teams, they're good sides, and they should be playing high.
Well, I opened saying that it's not all doom and gloom, and that was a great way to end there, Mike, because there is a brilliant future for clubs like yours and clubs across non-league, but we just need that solidarity, and we need a bit of guidance, I think, from higher up. But, Mike, I've taken far too much of your time already. I'll let you go, because you've probably got a football club to run and things like that. But it's been fantastic to have you on the Non-League Football Show. We'll continue to follow you. Your fortunes, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
And Merry Christmas to everybody as well.
So 2020 has all been about tough choices. So sometimes, like Mike at Mangotsfield United, those choices have had to be made at the lowest ebb, but others are still tough when you're apparently flying high. Our next guest in recent weeks has seen his side off to a great start in Step 2. It cost him his manager, who made the step up from up to National League Football. So how do you go about appointing a new manager when you're top of the league, but still so much of the season to go? To tell us, welcome to the Non-League Football Show, co-chairman at Gloucester City, Alex Petherham.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm good, Alex. Now, what about you? I guess plenty of interest from potential new managers when James Rowe departed, but bringing in a new man in at the bottom of the table is perhaps easier than one when you're at the top and there's not much room to wriggle.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because what happened with us this time round was because of our position and hopefully our ambition and where we're hopefully looking to take the football club, we actually wanted to bring a man to us, which makes it a whole different interviewing type person. When you're at the other end of the table, for a better phrase, potentially you're almost grateful is the wrong word, but you're grateful for the applicants when they come in. The position we found ourselves was we were obviously grateful for the 62 that applied, but we were very, very keen to bring a certain person in who we now can confirm, obviously, was Paul Groves, into the football club. Paul's got a fantastic career, you know, he's only last month he was playing managing in the highest levels of football in the Europa League.
I have to admit, Paul Groves there were plenty of names mentioned, and everybody knew you were flying high. It was going to be a great job, but Paul Groves was a surprise appointment to me. But as you mentioned, I mean, that CV would get a foot in the door at most football league clubs, if not even higher.
Yeah, no, and Paul's had a number of offers to try and tempt him out of Israel, bring him back to the UK, and we're just grateful that we're the club that's managed to do that. So hopefully he can take us to the next step up in the pyramid, and we can continue the journey that we've started this season, very much look to push on.
Yeah, football's a changing beast, particularly in this COVID era, but non-league especially as well. Looking at that varied CV he's got, non-league with Stafford Rangers, where I think I first came across him, Indian Super League, but his time at Bournemouth, his time at Portsmouth, West Ham, and as you mentioned more recently, Israel at Maccabi Haifa, where they played Europa League football against Spurs only a month or so ago. Do you think that's such a varied CV and a knowledge breadth and understanding of football and where it's heading, I guess that was the biggest advantage of making this appointment?
Yeah, very much. We talk about it a lot here is the little black book. And the most important thing we need at this football club is someone that's got a fairly large little black book. So we felt that Paul had that. We felt that his personality and his general approach to life very much ticked all the boxes for us. He's a very humble guy. He's a fantastic gentleman. So we were delighted to be able to open talks with him and his previous club over in Israel. And his Khalifa have been fantastic to talk to, and they allowed us to go into talk straight away. The timescales we set out, as you'll probably notice if you go back through the statements I put out, we actually stuck to them to the day, and that was because we were very aware of the timescale of how long it would take to bring Paul to the football club with the various different permits, visas and whatever else we had to do, along with obviously his the notice that we had to give his previous employer. So yeah, we're thoroughly delighted, and he's definitely the man to take this football club further.
And I've loved your openness and the fact that you're trying to keep everybody engaged and in the loop on what's going on. And as a chairman, it's always difficult because there's certain things you can't put out. You're negotiating. There's things that you need to sort of keep in your pocket just because that's the way you have to play the game. But obviously, I guess with him being in Israel, that meant that the interviews were virtual too. I mean, we've all learned to use Zoom and Microsoft Teams in recent weeks, but there's still that element. You mentioned his personality. There's that magic element of personality which you can't always get across on a video call. There's a sense of you need to be in the room with people. He must have been very special on video, I guess, to get this across.
Well, for us, it was even better than that. I had a personal approach from a number of people suggesting Paul. And when Harry Redknapp's one of your references,
that's not bad as a reference, is it?
Very, very hard to say no to the King of the Jungle.
Well, I hope so, there was some jam roly poly as soon as Paul arrived. Then.
But no, yeah, he really is. He really is a special guy, and we're delighted to have him here. And when, I can't remember the rest of his references are, but, we spoke to Harry Redknapp was one, and Avron Grant was the other. So, these aren't names that get banded around within Gloucester very often at all, really. So when those sort of names are standing, are prepared to put their own name to the, candidates, the wrong word, but, number one on your shortlist, it really does make the decision a lot easier.
But I think also, though, the fact that he was willing to talk to you, open discussions, and then the appointment afterwards, it's certainly a statement of intent from your club, and it shows where the project is going. It's very much like what we've grown accustomed to since you joined the club as co-chairman. Managers has become a recent trend in non-league football particularly, but the success that yourself and Eamon have had there since you joined the co-chairman role, do you think that's maybe a role that people are going to copy? There's going to be more co-chairmen now coming out? It's such a large role at a football club.
That's a really good question. I think Eamon and I are a little bit quirky, a little bit unique, so it kind of works for us. Very much a 50-50 partnership in every way, kind of financially and non-financially. But the way it works is I'm very much the front man, for a better phrase, and Eamon's very much behind the scenes. Doesn't mean to say we don't talk. We talk 3-4 times a day about the club. So I think the structure we've got here works because I'm prepared to kind of be the front man. And he's very much happy to be in the shadows, for a better phrase. But Eamon's had 25 years of practice at owning a football club prior to me joining. So he still convinced you that it was a good idea. Well, yeah. Well, sometimes my parents always used to say it's not what they say, it's what they don't say. And looking back on that, they were dead right. What Eamon didn't say is all the key ingredients.
But I'm speaking to you this week because you're top of the National North. You've appointed a new manager whose CV we've already discussed. References I'm not sure any non-league manager in the past has sort of come up with. But it's also a massive week for the club. But there's a chance you may finally get the fans in at New Meadow Park.
Yeah, so we've actually had our COVID numbers signed off yesterday at 1,000 for the New Meadow Park, so we're very happy with that. What helps here is that because it's a new ground, in inverted commas, because it's a new ground, all the fire escapes are naturally wide anyway, the footways are naturally wide anyway, so our COVID number is not as low as some of our counterparts in the league. Purely because I guess with a new ground, you've got the updated building control and the updated regulations that we have to adhere to. So, yeah, we've been quite lucky in the fact that 1,000 is our number for the COVID world. And hopefully we're just waiting on the final approval from the league. So we've had our building control approval. We've had our sign-off now from the Gloucestershire Safety Advisory Group. The last tick in the box is from the National League. So we're very much hoping that we can get that one done now and signed off, and we can welcome fans for the first time back to Meadow Park, or more importantly, to even Gloucester for the last 13 and a half years. So, yeah, it'll be a special day on Tuesday, and Paul's got the bragging rights, for a better phrase, to say that he's the first manager to welcome fans back into the city, even.
Well, we mentioned that he's got a great CV behind him, but as new managerial appointments go, I don't think I've ever reported on a new manager coming in who's top of a division and coming into a new ground for the first time that fans are going to be allowed in.
Yeah, no, it's a bit of a perfect storm, isn't it, really? So we're just thrilled. You know, Paul's someone that we've been keeping an eye on's the wrong phrase, because it makes it out that we're kind of a big club, and we're very much not. But someone that we've kept in contact with, and you know, he really is hopefully the one for us, and hopefully the one that can continue to take this football club forward. But like I said a few times now, the most important people at any football club is the person that's got the ball at his feet. As a manager and an owner and a chairman, even, never have the ability to have the ball at the feet. The players will always be the most important part of the club here. So we need to make sure that we continue to build the squad and grow the squad. And you'll see a few that have exited recently, and a few that are going to come in the next few weeks. And we've been quite straight with the players. You know, if you don't want to be here, then obviously, you know, that their pastures are probably best off elsewhere. And what we need to continue to do at the football club is make sure that everyone wants to be here, and everyone wants to play for the club, and play for the club for all the right reasons. So, yeah, we're delighted in the progress that we've made in the past couple of weeks, and hopefully we can continue with a difficult away fixture to Kirsten on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mentioned it was a tough decision for you to try and appoint a manager at the top, but I guess it's going to be tough for Paul to come in, because you've got levels that you want to maintain, because you want to stay up the top there. But as you say, you've had a couple leave the club that have followed James off to Chesterfield. So he's going to have his work cut out from the outset. Is he able to sort of join in almost immediately and get things underway?
Yeah, definitely. He's got a budget to go out and replace players. But more importantly, we don't need to rush, do we? We're at the right end of the table to take our time. We were probably favourites to get relegated this year, so we take every day that we're at the top of the table or near the top of the table, we take that as a blessing. Life doesn't owe us anything, you know. At Gloucester, we're just very grateful to still have a football club after 13 years away from the city. So everything we do here is a blessing, and we, like I continue to say, we need to stay humble, and we need to remember that, you know, York and Boston have all got these posh new stadiums being built, and ours is built out of shipping containers. So we have to remember who we are and stay, you know, keep our feet on the ground, because we're in a position at the moment that we're delighted to be in. But when you're at the top, it's very easy to get shot at. All the famous old statements of, you know, you don't win anything until the end of the season, and it doesn't really count until after Easter. Well, they're all dead right, you know. Where we are is, we certainly wouldn't want to be in another position, but everyone is now chasing, and there are some fantastic teams in this league with much, much, much bigger budgets than us. So, we're just grateful for where we are and the journey we've been on, and we're lucky enough to have a group of players that want to play for the club and continue to take us forward.
Well, having broadcast this show from for a number of years previously from an old shipping container, we know how homely they can be and how important they are. I mean, how, just express to the, you keep mentioning how long you've been away from Gloucester, and having been involved with my own club, we were nomads for 8 years and on the road. It's just so difficult, isn't it, to build the spirit even within a dressing room, let alone as a wider club, when you haven't got your own home. I mean, how, being back at your own ground, how important is that going to be to help the club move forward?
Yeah, no, it's fundamental, isn't it? We were playing last season in a different county, and we weren't even in Gloucestershire. So we were playing in Worcestershire last year, and every single game we had to arrive like we were the army and leave like we were the army. Everything got picked up and taken away, everything from physio tables to kit, everything, you name it, we took it with us, you know. So the only thing that we didn't take was the actual pitch in the stands itself. So it's a lot easier being able to, the physio hasn't got a cart around three tables, and the kit man hasn't got a lug around all the footballs, and everyone is it's much more homely here, because it's pretty difficult to try and squeeze a physio bench in the back of a Nissan Micra, you know.
having seen many a physio try and do that, I can fully support that argument.
Not very easy, you know. It's not very easy when you've got 32 footballs going into the back of a Mini.
And you are at the top of the National North at the moment. It's promotion. Is that the target this year now, or is it just you want to see the season out? Is it the important bit?
Yeah, seeing the season out is the important bit. You know, we're on a journey, as we talk about regularly, and hopefully the journey and the dream can continue. But it very much is a journey, and it very much is a dream. We're overachieving at the moment. We know that. Like I said earlier, jokingly, you know, you can't have the budgets in the grounds and the stadium that your Yorks and your Bostons have got and your Fylds have got to not expect those guys to kind of come at you very, very strongly. And I'm sure that those three will be right up there battling for the out and out victor come the end of the season. If we're still in around the numbers, then fantastic, you know. But our season had a very clear goal at the start of it, and it was don't go down, don't go bust. So our ambition and our ambition stays the same. We are very grateful for where we are. We stay humble to who we are, and our goal for the season is, you know, don't get relegated. So we're, what are we, 20 points now, 20 something points? We're halfway there, aren't we? 40 points is the magic number. So I'll be a lot happy when we get to that figure.
And, a fairly happy chairman, I would have thought, in this week, or co-chairman. And it's always good to have a thoughtful chairman and someone that, well, you started as a fan, moved on to a sponsor, and then you've been engulfed in it now. You can't walk away now. That's it. Non-league's got you.
Yeah, that's it. My granddad used to come all those years ago. And then my dad, obviously, and then I became a sponsor. I remember Eamon asked me to come to the game. We were in the South. We were playing Bath, and I watched Gloucester versus Bath. They beat us 3-1, ironically. And I turned around after watching, you know, the army of our supporters and volunteers pack up and take all our kit away. And I was saying to Eamon, I can probably chuck $5,000 your way, and that will buy us a couple of whatever it bought, you know. I think it was a better physio table and some training kit at the time. That was all it was. And then off the back of that, I got asked to come to a few more games, and I think I put another couple of grand in. And next thing I know, it was like, right, if we're going to do this, let's do it. But if we're going to do it, we need to get a ground. We need to, you know, fulfill. We need to be able to push forward. And to be able to push forward, we needed the ground. That was the first and foremost thing. So, you know, we managed to find a bit of cash lying around the house, and what are we now, 10 months later, we've built the ground, we're back in Gloucester, we're back playing in the right colour with the right badge, we've gone back to our roots, we've gone back to what my granddad would have wanted me to do. I don't think people realise that the yellow and black that Gloucester used to play in was because our sponsor back in the 80s, or our owner back in the 80s, was Westbury Homes, and they're now called Persimmon Homes. And their corporate colours was yellow and black. So the only reason we played in that kit was because of that was what our sponsor or owner wanted to do for their own self promotion. You know, my granddad and dad never watched us playing yellow and black until in the 80s. So we went back to our roots, for a better phrase, and the badge went back to being resembled around what it was originally, which was all around the shield of Gloucestershire. Hopefully we've put some roots down now back in the city, and we can start to attract the best local talent, and as we hopefully start to climb the pyramid, because I think people forget that football is a pyramid and everyone's aiming to be in that very one top spot at the very, very, very top of the pyramid. So your Liverpool's of last season, we are at the moment quite a few steps down that pyramid, and hopefully every day we can progress and make progress. This year we've gone to the full-time model at the football club, which has helped. Means that the players were in today, the players are back in again tomorrow. So that makes the club be a lot more, to answer an earlier question, that makes the club itself be a lot more homely, because everyone's there every day, you know? And when you've got players like Kev Dawson nicking the Christmas tree and sticking it on the centre circle, it becomes very much like a home environment. That's the sort of thing my kids would do wind up my wife.
Well, Alex, it certainly sounds like football's properly come home this week, or will do
fun
in the coming week.
I think that's the key here. We have fun.
And that's why we're all involved in non-league football. It can take far too much time up in your week, but it's the days that it puts a smile on your face that you're there for it.
Yeah, and we're just grateful to now be in a position where we can hopefully look to take the football club forward. It really has been a journey, and everyone talks about the phrase, the project, and it rattles the fans somewhat. They hate the term, so I now say it even more probably just to wind them up. But it really has been a project, and hopefully we're now at the next phase or the next tranche, and we can go again. Who knows where we'll end up this season? Hopefully we're at the upper end, and we'll go again from there. But if we're not, luckily football's always got another season, right? So if we're not this year, we go again next year. And if we're not the season after, we go again. And every year, hopefully we can keep making a forward momentum and progress.
Well, and I know you've had some stick over the past few months over various bits.
You've noticed that as well. Yeah.
But that's the wonders of non-league, and that's what we try and do on this show, is actually sort of expose, I think is probably a bit too strong a word, but the number of hours that and the grief that actually the fans don't see, that the people behind the scenes to, you know, yourself as a chairman, you mentioned all the volunteers as well, packing up that the benches and making sure that when you get to a game, everything's ready and everything works perfectly fine. That's the thing that makes non-league so special. And that's the thing that actually means that as much as we'd like to go up the pyramid, there's a certain level that it stops becoming as exciting and as fun.
It's got to be enjoyable, right? And that's what we say here. And it has to be fun and it has to be enjoyable. And you can't be at this football club without understanding that comes first and foremost. There's a number of people that will say we're not professional, and yeah, we're not professional, but we're also non-league. And I get really frustrated when I hear you know, you're just a bunch of amateurs and, you know, you're a very unprofessional club. Well, yeah, we fully accept that, though. We embrace that because, unlike others, potentially, not so much at our level, but higher up, you know, we accept who we are. And I say it all the time, you know, we have a ground built of shipping containers. That's how professional we are. We're just grateful to be back, and hopefully we can keep pushing forward.
And you have a ground, you have a football club, you have a new manager, and hopefully you'll have some fans in as well. Alex, I've taken up far too much of your time, but it's been fantastic to have you on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck with the project and going forward.
That's it.
And no doubt we'll speak again. We'll speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
Now, I often tell my non-believer mates that anything the pro game can do, that a non-league can do better. So when I saw on social media a man known to me personally as one of non-league's hard men was taking inspiration from Marcus Rashford's child food poverty campaign, I knew we had to cover it on the Non-League Football Show. Non-league against child food poverty is a movement rightly gaining traction, and to tell us more, welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Ben Gearing.
Hello, how's it going?
It's good, Ben. Now, I'm guessing inspiration from Marcus Rashford, but a very different approach, much more on the community focus side of things, and you're getting non-league clubs involved. How does it all work?
Do you know what? I'm going off the cuff. I'm absolutely going off the cuff. So, again, starting with the Marcus Rashford campaign, I was on a train traveling up to pick a car up, and I was reading how the government initially declined what he put forward. I just got chatting to the guy I was with, and I was like, look, that's embarrassing. Like, I'm a dad myself, and I always think of when I get to sort of 35, 36, then what? And I can't pull in a football wage that I've kind of relied on for so many years. I don't have the qualifications to go and jump into a high-end job. I just said, like, there's something there that non-league can do, because, like I say, I've been around it for so long. Some of the fan bases that these clubs have got, and the generosity that the supporters and the volunteers, the players, it's huge. And like I say, that if it was to pick up, hopefully, like it's doing now, the support could be massive. So I just wanted to basically involve each club, send out an email of what I wanted to do, and just involve us a bit more, because I think there's help there.
Yeah, and the whole concept, it looks like you started up sort of creating these hampers just to make sure that people that maybe weren't looking forward to Christmas as much could enjoy Christmas with essentials in there, and just bring a smile on people's faces. But there's a million and ways that people can get involved as well. But you've also got a donation page, I believe.
Yeah, so I did start straight away. I put a Feed in Britain. Done me a GoFundMe, if you like. Mm. And I just got it started as a little target, £1,000. But that was just to kind of step on the ladder, just so I kind of got things moving. I put it out there, and to be honest, I think it's on about £45. I haven't even looked. But it was about drawing people's attention and trying to get people to buy into what I'm doing. So I was promoting that, I was retweeting it, I was chucking it around everywhere. And I had a couple of tweets that I put out there, and I had one or two people step forward. And off the back of it, I mean, I got a guy called Mark, who stepped forward, and he lives at home with his dog. And he just contacted me and said, look, sometimes, you know, my dog eats before me. And it was like, wow. So I went and met him. And yeah, there he is, just a normal, regular guy that just stays quiet and doesn't say anything, and just as long as his dog's fed, he's happy. So off the back of that, I gave him a little bit of work, and I just put him out there. I said, look, this is Mark. Mark's doing a bit of painting in my house. He charged me like 20, 30 quid. Yeah, he just didn't want a lot of money, but it was just something to kind of get his food going. So I put that out there. I put a little Facebook post, and he's still working now. And we stay in touch. You know, I mean, he's actually now helping other people. Literally 2 days ago, he called me and said, look, I need a fridge freezer for this lady across the road. She's 81. And her freezer, she's just got no food. She can't store it. Can you help? So I put it on Facebook, and within 10 minutes, I had a fridge freezer. So I went to grab my mate, grabbed the van, and went and installed it for her. So it's like an infection. Like he sees what I help him, so he's now helping other people. And it just virals. And like I say, from where we're at now, where I started, I mean, hamper-wise, we counted today, we've donated 91 hampers.
Brilliant.
Over £2,000 has gone through my account in donations.
And it shows that, yeah, we often talk on this show about the difficult times, the difficult things that non-league clubs face or fans. And, you know, it's not a great time to be a non-league fan at the moment, particularly steps three and four with it, without any football and that sort of thing. But this shows the power of non-league and the non-league community.
I had absolutely no... I knew if this was to kick off and this was to get into the right hands and promote it the right way, this would take off. Just because of they're proper people, you know, they're real. They got like starting from the players. The players go to work. I go to work. We then go to football. We get home late. You know, we're up and down the motorway. The managers, you know, they go to work as well. They go and scout games. Then it goes right the way through the football club. So you've got the volunteers, the kitchen lady, none of them are paid. Supporters that turn up, that they can go, especially when you get to the London clubs, no doubt you've got Premier League clubs on your doorstep, but they're turning up at your Maidenhead. They're turning up at your Woking. Because they're true, honest supporters. And I interact, no matter what club I'm at, I'm always interacting with supporters online or whatever it may be. It's very busy, and I know exactly the stick I get for it. But they're just honest people. And I know that given something like this, it doesn't matter if they're wealthy or not. They were more than happy to put £23 towards the hamper. Just because it's not even like a question. Some of them were just saying, bank details, send it over. I want to donate this, I want to donate that. And then some of them were coming back a day later. Look, I've got a boat for it now, I want to do another one. And I just feel that if you're in the sort of higher end of the football pyramid, you struggle to find that kind of, I call it leadership. I honestly would call it leadership because they set the way for the rest of us, really. So that's where I was really encouraged. And I just thought, once I got that thought, I was just bowling with it. Still to this day, I'm going off the cuff, but daily, absolutely daily. I mean, the money that's gone through my account today is just like, wow. And it's not just my local area. Jake Howes from Hemel Hempstead, he's gone and he transferred me £600 today for 26 hampers for Hemel Hempstead's community. And not only has he just said, look, you know, I'll give it to the club and let the club deal with it, we've booked 2 o'clock on Monday for him to go and collect the food from Aldi. He is single-handedly, he's borrowing his dad's van and he is hand-delivering the food. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and this at the times like this, I did an article in the non-league paper this week, last week, about the importance for solidarity at non-league at the moment when different clubs are struggling, different clubs in different tiers, and we all need to come together. And it's a fantastic example of the power of non-league. If people want to get involved, if people want to get one of these hampers, Ben, how can they go about it? How can they get in contact with you?
So, I'll be honest, it started by people would just pay. I've got, obviously, my normal general and personal account that doesn't really get used. So it started like that, where people were saying, like, okay. So it was really manageable. You know, I could see what's going in. I've got a lovely lady that does all the shopping for me. Women just know how to shop. So she's got that down to a T. I think there's... that goes through right the way through to click and collect. And she's actually gone out on some of them and actually gone and done the shopping herself. So it is going through my account. Now, depending on how big this goes and how many people want to get involved, I think I'm going to have to go and get a GoFundMe, and I'm going to have to seek some sort of management in terms of how this money gets looked after, to protect myself as well, because I would hate for anybody to... I know the GoFundMe, for example, I know they take a cut, and that's what people were saying to start with. You know, keep it in your account so 100% goes towards the hampers. Otherwise, you might have to go, well, look, GoFundMe are going to take X amount, so we have to then ask for more money. But, you know, just today alone, over £1,000 has gone through my account. And some people aren't generally letting me know they've paid. So it's just like, I have to manage. I haven't been to work for 4 days. Because I'm literally trying to make sure every single penny, whether they're donating a toy or a hamper, gets ordered. So in answer to your question, at the moment it's going through my account, so you can contact me at, obviously on my Twitter, my Instagram, or my Facebook page. However, I have got things started, for a GoFundMe, which will come out. Just so if it gets to a point, like I say, if it gets a bit too big, then it will need to be in an account that people can kind of see, should they want to see where their money's going.
Well, we'll retweet all the links and sort of get people in contact with you if they want to follow it up, and we'll see if we can help out as well with the campaign. Ben, I did mention that I know you as a non-league hard man. I wanted to sort of mention this. Recently, you've been out injured. You're back now. You're at Woking, but you had an injury. You picked up pre-season. You featured in the second round of the FA Cup for Oxford City. But this injury was a collision in a friendly, and you still, as you do, you get up, you carry on, you tell the Woking manager Alan Dowson it's just a knock, you'll be fine. 5 days later, you ended up getting an X-ray and found out you had a broken leg.
Yeah, it was two fractures. Yeah, probably a good idea to get taken off, to be honest, because I wasn't moving great. But yeah, I mean, like I say, I don't have the mentality you'd have to drag me off. But yeah, sometimes I don't make the most sensible decisions. So it's just like I say, it comes down to the club, your teammates, and your manager. When you've kind of got that mentality that you'll run for a brick wall for them, I generally mean it. And I know there's other players that absolutely would as well. And you know, and it gets you respect from your manager. And it's a two-way thing. And like I say, I generally can't thank this football club enough, and the manager for allowing me to sort of play football for this club. And I'll always be the same. I'll always give 100% for both of them moving forward.
Well, on this occasion, Ben, you've certainly made the best decision in getting these hampers up and running and non-league against Char Poverty is a fantastic decision. And as I said, you know, the fact that you get up with a broken leg and carry on shows that anything the pro game can do, non-league can do better. Ben, Gary, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show and best of luck with the project.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
So let's round up the rest of the week's non-league news. It's back on over to non-league paper towers, and it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to senior writer Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Nice to be back on. How are you?
Well, good. It's a Thursday afternoon again. It's been quite a week for non-league, really. No further news, really, on the future of the season at steps 3 and 4. Although, last weekend, after we spoke to Matt on last week's show, we did get some more clarification from the leagues on how the vote went and for the continued suspension. It did look a hefty majority in favour of the suspension from the clubs in those leagues and divisions.
Yeah, that's right. It was a majority voted to agree to continue the pause, which is obviously now currently what's happening. Obviously, some of those clubs are taking part in FA Trophy fixtures over sort of this weekend and the next week as well. But yeah, that's sort of the situation at the moment. It's going to be reviewed on December 16th, in line with when the government reviewed the tiers, and then again on the 30th of December. So hopefully we get a bit of positive news out of that. I think in the meantime, there's obviously this loans versus grants sort of debate going on at the moment, and trying to turn those loans into grants, which would be more beneficial for clubs at steps 3 and 4. And, you know, I think it's sort of widely regarded, and also at step 5 and 6, I think it's also widely sort of regarded, really, that loans is only sort of pushing the problem further down the line, really. And, you know, certainly grants would go some way to helping clubs who have had to close their clubhouse and don't have that revenue stream, or indeed, you know, don't have fans in their ground. So, yeah, that's the situation at the moment. Like I said, sort of a bit sort of calm after the storm, really, this week. But it's still very much a serious issue in non-league, and we'll have a bit more reaction to that in Sunday's paper as well.
Yeah, we had a bit more clarification as well on the options that they're looking at as well. You know, they have to seriously contemplate, you know, as to whether the season can be continued, I guess, but, you know, depending when restart could take place. And there's so many, we've spoken so much this year about the variables, but almost every week there seems to be another variation that comes in. And so there's like a choice A leads to options B, C, D and E. And then it just gets more complicated, really, as the year goes on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Obviously, these pauses, delays fixtures. You know, we've missed quite a few now, really. And obviously the knock-on effect of that is whether the league will be able to finish. There's been talk of extending the season to the end of May, which I think seems like it's going to happen. But even then, is that enough time to get fixtures in? You know, playing Saturday, Tuesday every week for the last few months is going to be tough. So, yeah, there's these different scenarios I think that leagues are considering. you know, we sort of heard even before the season started, if it was a delayed start, you know, would you split leagues further and maybe sort of play, you know, different sides, sort of play only sort of 10 teams in sort of a league split between two. It all sounds quite confusing, but there is certainly nothing to the madness. It would certainly make it an interesting season and one to remember from that aspect as well. So I think these are the things considering at the moment. I think, you know, probably restarting in January, you know, it'd be difficult then to get all the fixtures in, and this is why they have to consider these things. And certainly, I think it's the opinion of a lot of clubs and managers and players, etc., that, you know, they don't want to be in the same situation as last year, where you see efforts, you know, go unrewarded. So certainly some sort of resolutions this season on the pitch would be ideal. It's just sort of a case of getting back playing, really. And obviously the tier system hasn't helped in that respect at all. Obviously now with the vaccine being rolled out, it does seem like things are moving in the right direction. So hopefully by the time January comes around or even sooner, we'll have a little bit more clarity on where clubs stand and what's able to happen, really.
Yeah, and anybody that knows me knows I'm a solutions man. I like an idea that creates a solution, and I haven't seen it anywhere else. But it was mentioned to me this week by the very insightful Julian Fox at FC Video, does lots of non-league clubs down in the southeast. That maybe non-league may want to consider the old-fashioned double header that you used to get in local football and junior football, where, you know, it may be a way of getting the season's finish. I actually think, you know, it seems a great idea for a non-league fan. What a great day out that you go and watch, you know, back-to-back games. So, you know, two lots of 90 minutes. For the fans, it's fantastic. For the clubs, it could save them on costs. That's a great idea. I guess the big question mark is whether the players will be up for it and the managers. Would it work for non-league if you've got some injuries on that weekend and it could cause a problem? But it could mean that we could get the season finished.
Yeah, it could. It's certainly another idea. Obviously, I think playing back-to-back 90 minutes in the same afternoon sounds pretty grueling, really. You know, when clubs talk about sort of playing Saturday, Tuesday, is sort of difficult enough in that respect. I don't know. It's sort of quite a Sunday league in a way. I'm probably expecting to play a few of those myself.
We could even put some jumpers down for goalposts. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Get the oranges out half time. I think that's the thing, isn't it? But I think there's probably a lot of those ideas floating around at the moment. I think probably the one that sort of seems to be talked about quite a lot is further regionalising the division. And sort of splitting them in half and then playing games that way to try and reduce travelling and things like that. But ultimately, it comes back to whether fans are allowed into grounds, whether clubhouses are allowed to be open. That's sort of the main crux of it, really. And if those things, you know, aren't able to happen, then you're probably looking at financial support to try and get clubs through these matches without those things in place. So, it seems like we always say it, but still in the dark a little bit at the moment.
Yeah, well, we have, just as you're sort of speaking here in the last hour or so, had a notification, I guess, from the Trident Leagues of their new community fund launching with up to £5,000 in grants available to clubs for community projects as they look to survive. But which is great because, you know, clubs are going to have to. We spoke to Merthyr Town last week, who are having to think outside the box because they haven't got any football, but they are operating as a non-league club and they are able to sort of think out the box a little bit and make some money. And clubs are going to need to be doing that over the coming months, whether football returns quickly or not. So I guess these sort of community grants are going to be a great way to kickstart those sort of projects.
Yeah, that's right. Clubs always sort of find a way, interesting ways of raising money and doing things within their community, and it's good that the leagues have this community foundation to offer this sort of support to clubs, particularly at this time, and hopefully it can be the start of something bigger and it continues to grow. I think clubs appreciate any sort of support they can get, whether it's sort of financial or things sort of behind the scenes, whether it's their pitches or building community efforts. So it's definitely good news for them, and yeah, really look forward to seeing how that works. But like you say, you know, clubs are always doing their own bit. They always find a way to come up with some money down the back of the sofa or something like that in the clubhouse. So just another nice thing for them this week.
It's actually you mentioning the money down the back of the sofa again. A conversation I had this week with somebody where we record. You go into a non-league clubhouse in days of yore, and they all have these little banquettes of seating areas for people to sit, and that's where you would have found a 50p dropped out of someone's pocket. But nowadays you've got all this open plan and sort of chairs able to move around freely. So clubs aren't even able to find the bits of fluff that you used to find down the back of the sofas to make that happen. Now, you mentioned earlier about FA Trophy and FA Vars, despite the clubs at Step 3 and 4 not being able to play competitive league games, they are involved in the major non-league cup competition still this week.
Yeah, that's right. It's a bit of a mismatch still at the moment. In the Trophy, we've still got some first round ties to be played, and then the majority of second round ties are coming next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then you've got the third round that's already been made, which is on December 19th. So it's sort of a very busy couple of weeks really for the competition trying to move through that way. Obviously they're sort of a little bit behind after the second lockdown, and it's not the same for the Vars, with their second round games taking place this weekend, and then already the third round draw has been made for December 19th as well. So yeah, busy period for these cup competitions. Obviously there has been some casualties of teams dropping out because they feel that they have to play this game, but they'd have to play behind closed doors, so it's not worthwhile. So you have to respect their decisions of that. Obviously, there's an element of prize money as well for winning teams going through to the next round. It's a difficult one for clubs, really, when you consider that these games have to be played, whether they're in front of fans or not. It's sort of not nice to see sort of clubs being put into that position, really. Obviously, the FA are keen to get the competition finished and done and see it through this season. But we've also still got the 2019-20 finals to be played as well.
Yeah, they could become the we have non-league finals day now, which we campaigned for years to make sure. Get the two games on the same day. Maybe we'll have to have non-league finals weekend with last year's cup finals on the Saturday and this year's on the Sunday. Who knows? Again, it's that so many different variables. As you mentioned, we've got clubs dropping out. We've got the rounds coming thick and fast. And you understand that in a way, because if there isn't any competitive league football, then it's important that clubs are able to play competitive games to keep them ticking along if they're in that cup competition. But then if the leagues were to come back, then we get that fixture backlog again, and everything's going to... It's just trying to get everything to sync up is going to be the difficult thing whenever the league is planned to finish.
Yeah, that's the thing. Probably the way this year's going, we'd expect to have some sort of blizzard of weather over the next couple of months and for games to be postponed that way and football still not to be played, which is another factor to take into account. But when you've already got sort of third round draws being made and both sides on each side of the draw don't know who's going to be in it, it sort of says how far the competition is behind, really. And then of course you'd then probably have sort of a situation where Notts County gets to the FA Trophy final again or something like that, or Concord Rangers, and like you say, your non-league finals weekend, they're playing on Saturday and Sunday in sort of consecutive FA Trophy finals, which would be bizarre. But it's sort of one of the strange sort of scenarios this season, this year is playing up, really.
Well, and this, if you almost, if you do examine it, it shows how difficult it is for the football administrators, because obviously we want those finals from last year to be played, and we've had semi-finals where squads have already changed for those clubs. They've got completely different sets of players that played in the tournament earlier. But then by the time we get to the a season, almost a whole season after, it's going to be even more difficult. And it, could it be that the same clubs get to the both the finals, and then, well, do they have to play different sets of squads, or do they play the same? It could be a very interesting summer. What we want is normality, and obviously we're in a pandemic situation, and there's a whole variety of things that can go right, go wrong, and things can change. But I suppose if we're looking for normality, at least in the new year, we can see. Now, the FA Cup third round will take place, hopefully as planned, in that first weekend. And we had an announcement this week that all of those games are going to be on TV in some format, on a digital platform or something. But that means some great coverage for the non-league contingent that are left in the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really great FA Cup third round draw, wasn't it? I think I can't really recall a third round from involving non-league teams where everything sort of seems to go in favour, really. You know, seeing sort of Marie get Tottenham, and then I think it was almost the next ball out was Stock brought her home to West Ham, and you know, it really was sort of what dreams are made of, really. And yeah, already sort of the media circus has started with Marine and Tottenham, and I think Neil Young sort of done endless interviews with every media outlet so far. Yeah, it's going to be a weekend to look forward to. Obviously, Marina in that Sunday evening slot on TV against Tottenham, which will be one really to look forward to. Stockport are on the Monday, and then we've got a couple of games on Saturday as well. So, a weekend really to look forward to, and hopefully before then we won't have sort of any issues with tears and things like that, which might dampen it.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a bit more clarification once the new year comes about. But in terms of this weekend, the important thing is that the non-league paper will still be there. What can we expect to read as well as everything we've already discussed? What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, another packed issue this weekend. Obviously, we've got the trophy action that we've talked about, and we'll look out to the VARs as well. Also, the National League fixtures as well, which are coming thick and fast. Obviously, they have our full round of midweek fixtures on Tuesday. And now, again, we're playing this weekend too. So, plenty to look forward to there. And everything else you can expect, really. Fixtures, results, tables, and plenty of great stuff from our writers as well. Sadly, we had your column in last week, Tim. So, anyone out there who missed last week's paper missed out on that, but hopefully we'll have you back in there soon. But no, there's plenty more in there this week.
It's a good reason to get up on a Sunday morning, whether you've written in it or not. It's always a there's football coming thick and fast everywhere, whether it's non-league or higher up at the moment. But the non-league paper is an essential part of a football fans diet, I guess. David, thanks for joining us again on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you soon.
Great. Cheers, Tim. Thanks very much.
That's it for this week. Thank you to all of our guests and for all of you for listening, wherever that may be. If your weekend is without football, it can be a bit bleak, but as ever, the non-league world is a wider community. There's a game out there if you want them. There's people out there willing to offer their support to you, and there's plenty of good folk doing great things, all in the name of non-league. Keep smiling and keep the faith in non-league. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at non-league show. Dave Anderson's there at Dave Anderson 78 and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio via smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay alert, stay safe, thank you and goodbye.
Chibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A, J-A-B-B-A.